Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome to the Patrice Brantley Show. We're helping others with the name of the game, and on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth. I got to say, today I'm here with Mr. and Mrs. Knight. They are coming to give us some good old-fashioned wisdom and know-how about redefining the norms. Y'all know the new year is coming here, and we're doing something different this year. We're not doing what we used to do in the past. That's packed up in the boxes and gone away. We are doing something new and making a new statement today. Our goal is to get in here and make our impact. So that I want to thank you so much, Mr. and Mrs. Knight, for joining us. But I'm so excited. Y'all see, I'm bubbling, right? I'm excited because I know when people sit down and hear about redefining the norms, this is going to allow people to take off that extra pressure from themselves. It's going to allow them to really stop and say, am I truly happy with what I'm doing? Or is it time for me to really like redefine my script of life? So let's jump right on in. Y'all know how we do. What's your story? What happened before you all got to the space of wanting to redefine your norms?
Well, with us, we grew up in households that kind of taught us, you know, the American dream, the picture that society paints of getting the right house, going to college, getting an education, a degree, and getting this, I guess you could say, dream job, or this job that gives you benefits, that pays you well, where you can pretty much create the life that you quote unquote want. And so, you know, of course we follow that trend. We follow that idea of what success, how success looks. And, you know, we went to college, and that's where me and my wife met.
Okay, hold on. I love how you tied that in. That's how me and my wife met. What's the name of the college? We need to know.
Georgia Southern University.
All right, Georgia. I see y'all.
And so we got a degree. We received well-paying jobs, and got the house, had two kids, and
God surprised us with a third kid.
and we have the dog, you know, the picture
dog,
that it paints.
Minivan that we had it all of
yes.
that.
And so literally, it sounds like y'all had the complete picture, like literally the complete picture that we all are sold.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we're going through life thinking, okay, we have things that's going pretty well, but it really didn't click with us. It's one thing to have all of these things as a part of your life, you know, going out to eat and having fun and going to places and on vacations and all of these wonderful things. But it's another thing when you're waking up in the morning and you think of, you're not excited about life.
Yeah, not feeling fulfilled.
You dread the day. You know, you're not looking forward to, you know, work or what you're going to encounter in a day, even though you have all of these wonderful things in your life that society tells you, well, this makes you happy.
Right.
Well, realistically, you're not happy.
Right.
You're not happy with your job. You're not really happy with your bank account. You want things to be different, and you want to feel different about your life.
Right.
And so when you're in that space, it doesn't matter how much of all of these amenities that you fill your life with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're still that void inside, that thing that I remember our pastor used to say that you have a God-shaped hole in you.
Mm.
And the only thing that can fill that is God and purpose.
His purpose for your life.
And no matter how many of these things you have in your life, that hole isn't complete.
Right.
It's not
right.
filled. And so you go through your day and you wake up every morning and you go to bed every night still feeling like, this
isn't it.
There's got to be something more than this.
And at the end of the day, you've checked all your boxes. Mm. You know, you've woken up at a certain time, you've gotten to work on time, you've gotten your kids off to whatever, you know, they've you, I mean, you've made as much of that you're supposed to make today. Your bills are paid. Your house is good. Your car is da 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 da. And so you've checked your boxes and you still feel empty.
And if this is a success, yeah. Then here's the thing I think most of us think. If this is success, then I should be happy, right?
Right.
But why am I not happy?
Oh, okay, hold on. Let me jump in here real quick. Y'all giving me good stuff. I gotta get in here. I feel like I'm double touching back in the day. So I love how you said you've checked all the boxes and still no happiness. And then you really hit me when you talked about if this is what society say happiness is. And I think I'm going to just use myself because I totally understand when you talk about that, checking the boxes. Oh, yeah, I checked it. I did exactly that. I was the one who made sure early. Okay, I got the job. I got this. I'm trying to check every box. Still, yeah. And in the midst of trying to check these boxes, I was drowning. I was drained. I was burned out. I was in places that I really, in my mind, I was like, I really want to look like this. And I saw, like, in my head, like, she would look like this. She would be happy by this age, by this stage. But no matter how many boxes I checked, there just was no happiness. And I found for me that it was about honestly finding what fulfills you.
Exactly. Because
I say, we get caught up running behind the possessions of looking successful. We get caught up in that, oh, it looks this way. And I truly, you know, my thing I always say I've discovered, especially during this COVID time, and I really discovered this way earlier in life, was that the American dream was nothing but a storybook scam. We get so used to telling people, get the house, get the car. Girl, you should be married by 30. You know, you should be doing this. All of these things that sound great, but meanwhile, you haven't figured out who you are. You don't know what your happiness looks like. You don't have no idea. So how long did this go on for you two?
Wow. Quite some time. And Carlton and I have been married for 18 years. Wow. And so, I mean, pretty much until a couple of years ago where we, I mean, you know, COVID was a rough time. It's a rough time for a lot of people, but it gave a lot of people time to get quiet. To get perspective. A lot of working from home, a lot of time with yourself, you know, and a lot of time with God, because you praying, Lord, pray for this person, pray for that person, pray this person doesn't get sick, and Lord, protect my family. You get a lot, yes. Lord, you know, what does this mean, this season of life? And so it caused a lot of questions. It gave a lot of time to get perspective, you know? And so during that time, God really began to speak to us about, you know, is this what your life is supposed to look like?
Yeah.
You know, we really had to come have some heartfelt conversations with each other. You at one time when we spoke with you earlier, you talked about the scariness of jumping out of the common, you know, there's comfort in common, you know, there's comfort in common, because even though you're miserable, you're comfortable with that uncomfortableness.
I know what to expect.
Yeah.
I mean, because I know what to expect. Oh, go ahead.
Here's the part that I'm gonna jump in on this. This is good. I'm gonna this. When you talk about that being comfortable, because here's the thing that I found, especially in people working with little kids and now with older adults all the way to the deathbed. Yeah. There has been such a level that we have been ingrained in, and this goes across all ethnic groups. We've been ingrained with, I just got to make it. I just got to survive. I just got to push through. I got a man up. I got a woman up. And we don't realize that's not the life we were given. We weren't supposed to have a life of, I got to survive. I got to keep struggling. I got to keep my head above water. We were given a life to be able to show excitement, acceptance, life, truly just life, and being able to live it in the fullness of what it's called to be.
Yeah.
And that's funny that you said that, because I remember one morning on my way back home, I was just going home and I was just kind of running through and talking with the Lord. And in our conversation, I remember just saying, well, the exact same thing. Well, you know, I just got to try to make happen what I need to make happen. And I felt this impression and said, no, you don't have to make it happen. Mm. Or you don't have to just deal with this. You have a choice.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we think we have to go through life with all of these obligations and all of these limitations and all of these things that we've kind of built our way into. Mm-hmm. And we think, well, this is the life I created, so I'm obligated to it. I can't change it.
Commitment. Yeah.
And so I can't change. This has now become my norm and I can't change this. But God wants us to understand you can redefine what that norm is. Exactly. And you can change it. You have a choice.
Exactly.
What I love about it when you talk about having that choice and redefining, that's a moment of empowerment. And I think for so many of us, we want to play the, well, they did this to me. I don't want to do that. Well, if I leave this, you know, what am I going to do? Like, I remember for me, the biggest step once I actually left my first career was that I just kept hearing this. Don't you do that good kind of job? You know, that good kind of job that benefits. You know what time you're going to be there. You know your vacation days. This is that. And I'm going to be honest. The good county job was a good county job. Yeah. Like, it had amazing benefits and stuff. But here's the thing. It wasn't the job that I was created for. Exactly. I knew that I wanted to make an impact in my community, and I gave it a good amount of time. But once I finally realized that I'm going in here every day and I'm drowning, I'm dying, exactly. I'm drained, and I want to do more, but I don't know how to get to that more yet. You know, I love that part. People love to tell you the beginning and the end of stuff. Yeah. They don't ever tell you the middle. Like, I feel that's like that's what we do a disservice to each other so much because we don't talk about what it means when you say, right. I'm happy and I want out. What does it look like?
Exactly.
And I just love when you talked about during that prayer time, that getting quiet with God. I feel like you said earlier, your wife mentioned it as well. When you got into this space during COVID, it was this, I need to get quiet. And what I found interesting, and a lot of people hated this, I know for Florida, for the time they did do their so-called lockdown, it was a thing of a lot of people couldn't stand that time of being alone, either with themselves or with their spouses or their children or whatever they had created, because it's so much easier to let it be a pleasant distraction on a weekend than really working through what it is. Interesting tidbit. One or two things happened during COVID. Either people got married. I saw a whole bunch of people get married. It was like, this is it. I know what to do this. Or either I saw people say, you know what? Listen, I've been with you. I'm done. Good day. We over. Yeah. And what I found interesting was for those who got married, I feel like they have what I call a fireproof marriage, because they really have walked in a season that is unlike any other to say, I'm going to be with you. And then I feel like for those who finally said, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
This means you knew a long time ago. And this was just a time to be like, hey, I can't do this with you no more. I'm tired of walking past you seeing people down the road. You know, they knew.
Right.
So
I can do this with 40-hour break.
Exactly.
But do this 4 hours every day.
And I think that's the thing. I think for a lot of us, this was the time of awakening to really see and understand. And that's why I love the whole mission of hearing you all talk about redefining that norm, because for so many people, it's been this, I'm just going to push through. I'm going to make it through. I'm going to make it happen. Yeah. And then when you finally got that moment to get some light that goes, you don't have to live like this.
Yeah.
What a moment that was. I'm going to be honest. What a moment it was for me. Because for years, I've been a person that had been driving 30 minutes or more to a job. And then all of a sudden, now we can do this at home? Well, all right. You know? I like this part. You know, that kind of thing. So it's so interesting to see. But for you all, I'm going to take the camera back off me and focus back on you. When did it really get to that space when you was like, I got to redefine this? Take me to those couple of years before you defined changing that norm for your house. What was it for you?
I think, you know, for me, I remember talking with you where I just had one morning, I just had a realization. And I was like, you know what? I don't know why, but I'm in my early 40s and I feel as though I've lost so much time. I feel as though I can't continue. I'm 40 something years old and I'm still not at a place where I'm living something, a life that makes me happy.
That's yours.
A life that's mine. Exactly. I had that conversation because I'm taking care of this over here. I'm taking care of this over here. I'm working this job where I'm, like you said, you know, just stressed out and pulled in so many multiple directions. You know, I'm caring for people, but it's taking my everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a job, a boss who I adore, you know, but my job is killing me. You know, wow. And so, I mean, that was part of it too, because you feel like you're going to disappoint someone if you step away from their expectation of you, you know, because not only are you a part, you living your own life, you're a part of their life, you know? And so, I mean, I have all these people who I'm responsible for and I'm feeling like, you know, it feels almost selfish, you know, to step back and say, you know, this really isn't the path I'm supposed to be on. You know, and so that was a realization for me. One morning I just got up and I had a realization. I'm in my early 40s. How much longer am I gonna do this? How much longer am I gonna deny myself the path that God is speaking to me? Yeah. And I don't fully yet know it, but I feel him pulling me, you know? And so he's pulling me into more time with him. He's pulling me to getting to know myself. And one morning, that is what he said to me. You need to get to know yourself. You don't know who you are, you know? And so I said, God, you know, I mean, I'm this daughter, I'm this wife, I'm this mother, I'm this
brother. All the roles. Literally, you realize you call that every role. You're so accustomed to calling out, I'm the sister of, I'm the daughter of, and he's going, no, darling. Yeah. I need you to see who I see in you.
Exactly. Right.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm sorry.
And you know, and that morning broke me. I mean, I came to Carlton crying. It was like, I can't do this any longer. How much longer am I feel as though I've been living a lie, you know? And it was like, I gotta change. Things have got to change. And he was kind of feeling that same way. God was working on both of us at the same time, you know?
Because you feel that tug and that pull. I always call it heart cries, or when your heart begins to leak. That when you finally slow down and you finally get quiet, your heart begins to cry out you, I want this. I desire this. This is my purpose. This is the kind of life I want to live. And you know, a lot of times because we don't know how to embark towards that or pursue it or how to even create it, we kind of suppress it.
Yeah.
And we just kind of ignore it. But that heart cry got put there, and he put it there, and he wants you to pay attention because the purpose he created for us, the life he created for us, is inside of that cry, is inside of that desire that pulls you towards something that we sometimes find ourselves pulling ourselves back from.
Right.
And it's interesting because when we're kids, we know this. We get into our imagination and we create it and we enact it out and we just have a blast with it. But somewhere along the way, when we get older and we start following this idea of success,
the American dream,
we lose sight of what really speaks to us and we start living out what speaks to everybody else.
So love that you said this, because as you're saying this, I so identify, because I find that it's interesting. For so many years, I always tell people, I was like, I was a loudmouth girl. I was the one that's getting in trouble because I just get popped because I tell you what I feel. But what I loved about it is, like you said, as a kid, we knew who we were. Like, I knew this mouth was going to be used for something. That was always my thing. And it's funny because I think back to a prayer I said when I was six. I was like, God, all I want to do is talk. That's it. And it was so funny because when I finally started getting into podcasting and really sharing the word the way I knew it, the way the Lord knew it to me, my mother goes, that's you.
Yeah.
And I go, really? She goes, yeah. That's that chat I had right there. Talk them out. You tell it all. But the thing that I like about it is that as kids, we knew it. It was easy. Like, we knew if we were that kid who was that one who, you can see it with little kids now. Mm-hmm. If you see them and they're in that room and they're paying teacher, that's something that they have in them. They don't even realize it, but they're doing it. It's, I mean, I have girlfriends that I have a girlfriend for life that literally she was a math person from beginning. And I was like, that is not me. So like, tell me how you get this. Like, that's her. She's all math all the time. And like, being an engineer now and doing what she does, it makes sense because that's what we're doing forever. But I think, as you said so many times, we get caught up in what society says it looks like, how it's supposed to go. I remember when it was time to go to college, so many friends of mine at this point, freshly kind of new to the internet world, they would go and Google and see how much the jobs made before they even picked a major. I thought that was the most funniest thing. I was like, that, oh, that's what we did. Oh, stop. oh my gosh. Yeah. I have a friend. I laugh because every single friend of mine who did that is nowhere in that job now.
Nope.
And the funny thing for me is, I knew in my heart, I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to change my community. Yes, that's who I'm going to be. And I did it. And I was like, I don't like this ride no more, Lord. Can I get off? this ain't it. My community don't want, they don't want me. They say they do, but you know, you're trying to make change. They like this. No. You want too much. And what I find in this whole process is, I feel, and this is just my personal, I always feel there is a continual, what do you want to be when you grow up? Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a continual process in life, because even growing and being married with kids, you're constantly saying something is calling, something's different.
Yeah.
And I just love how you all talk about this. So now I need some practical steps. Hello, somebody help me. I need some steps. What does it look like in this moment? So now I've sat down, I've said, hey, I don't like this. It ain't working for me. I've talked to my Lord. Maybe I even sought out some other help. Maybe I went and said, I need to go talk to a counselor, a therapist. Maybe I need to speak to my clergy, whatever that may be for me. I've done those steps. And now, what does it look like? What do I honestly do to redefine the norms? What do I do? What does it look like in practical words?
In practical words.
I think, like my wife mentioned earlier, I think one of the biggest things where we have to start is finding out more about us.
Yeah.
For so long, you know, for different people, we may have tried to create something that we thought was the life we wanted, or something that we kind of found ourselves in that somebody kind of steered us towards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have to sit down and have a real look at ourselves and say, okay, what speaks to me? What do I identify with? It's kind of getting back to that childhood space of dreaming again and looking in our imagination and, okay, what would I really love to do? Because God put those desires there. And a lot of times we're trying to find a blueprint to our purpose and they're already there.
Right.
Wow.
They've been there all along. We just suppressed it all along. Right. And we kind of, I know I would love to do this, but I can't do that right now. I have to pay these bills, so I have to do this. And when we really start listening to our heart cry and connect with God and say, oh, God, will you reveal to me, what did you really put me here to do?
Yeah.
What really is my passion? Mm-hmm. Can you show me what speaks to me? What did you create me for? Then he begins to allow you to see different things about your life. And did you notice when you were little, you had a desire for that? Or did you notice this person say you're really good at this?
Exactly.
Or did you notice that when you did this, you thrived at it and you enjoyed it? And you begin to notice all of these different things. Mm-hmm. And then you started moving. You just begin to move and pivot in that direction.
And you have to. And you said, you know, you started out saying, okay, we've gotten with God. We've done this, we've done that. But that part of it is continual.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point he was talking to me, God was talking to me about the fact that I'm a practical God, line upon line, precept upon precept. I can walk you with through this practical step of finding out who you are and what your journey is. And the Bible says, when I was younger, the scripture that says he gives you desires of your heart. When I was younger, a younger Christian, that spoke to me, he gonna give me a car, he gonna give me a husband, he gonna give me whatever I desire in my heart, you know? But as I grew and matured in the Lord, I realized that meant he, you know, spoke to the fact that what that means is I'm gonna put in you my desires for you. God gives me the desires in my heart that he has for me, that he wants for me.
Yeah.
And so he put those desires in me, those Crofton has always been about numbers too. Oh. He went to school for business. He went to college.
Well, not initially.
His third degree.
Four degrees later. That came through me going through different degrees and said, this doesn't connect with me. And I finally sat down one day at home and I said, God, what am I supposed to do? I'm tired of switching degrees. And I felt business. I'm like, business? That can't be me. I would never do business.
Right.
And it was like, business. And when I got into it, I loved it. And so you find out these different things that God allows you to see and notice about yourself or reveals to you about yourself, because if you want to know how something functions or how something works,
you go to the one who created it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so he begins to show you different things about yourself that moves you in the direction of where you're supposed to be, where you thrive the most, where you enjoy life the most, where you're actually happy, and the pictures that you see actually does make you happy versus this over here that does nothing for you.
Because your love is business. And so you were getting jobs where you do business. But now that God has taken you into this journey of following his path, you still are teaching people about structure and about business and about, so you're still feeling that desire, but you're doing it God's way. Same with me, you know, my degree is in counseling, you know? And so that was that heart to help people, that heart to, you know, so I had to find a degree and find a job that fit that heart desire. But then it's like, that's my heart, but that's not what God wanted to use it for. And so he has to show me and is showing us how to really fit the, not job, but the course that ministers to that thing that he put in us. Yeah.
So let's go a little deeper. In your own personal life, how did you redefine your norms in your space, in your home? So now business is your thing. You're on it. Mr. Carlson is doing it with there. Did it become a point where you had to do some pivoting and changing up some things as far as roles in the house for you with your change and redefining norms?
Yeah, we went through when God started speaking to me about business, of course I was doing different things that, you know, revolved around business. And for a period of time, I put more focus on the business side of things, and the job situation.
Yeah.
I was working at the airport and it was just starting to affect me physically, to the point I ended up in the hospital. And it was kind of a wake up. And the interesting thing is leading up to that, you know, sometimes we get a little hard-headed because we're trying to follow that norm that we think, okay, why do we follow that norm? Because I feel like there's security in that norm.
Right, exactly.
If I know what to expect and I know what's going to happen, then I don't have to worry per se. I can flow with something, even though it's not fulfilling me.
Mm-hmm.
I can stick with it because I find comfort and I find security in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it had been some time where I felt like God was telling me, you need to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you can't do that. How are you going to leave? you mean just up and leave? Okay, then maybe that was just me.
No, I done been there. Oh, I want to know. I think I'm heading that way again.
And so you're in that and you just kind of keep going, and then things start to get a little worse. Not that God's doing anything, but he already knew what was awaiting you if he didn't make that shift or that change. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I kept going, and I felt again, you need to leave. And then, you know, something happened, and I was just kind of in a situation where they obviously showed me, okay, we're more concerned about the job itself, not about you as the employee. Uh-huh. And so I'm like, okay, well, I still don't know how to make that shift or that change. This is really all I know. So I can't really do anything right now. So I still just ignore the voice.
So I kept going. Wow. So as I'm hearing you say this, I clearly hear Moses and I hear Jonah. I clearly hear these two, because I have been Moses on a couple occasions. I've been like, but Lord, I really don't do this really well. So like, you want me, like the chocolate chick right here with the natural hair? Like, I have to know it, because I'm like, but who gonna listen to me? Like, I know I'm loud and but me? You sure? Like, well, he like, no, I want you and the loud mouth and the natural on top. Okay, well, guess we're gonna be going. So I get it. I totally get it. In this space for you and all of this, and as you said, because you hit me when you talked about the hard-headedness, I was like, oh, let me just slap my hand down. I felt that. I'm not gonna put my hand up on myself. So many times we think we have it planned out. If I could just hold on to this, not realizing that he's like, I want to give you so much more.
Yeah,
and just fighting. it's so interesting to hear it and know that one, I'm not alone. Two, that he is so merciful and grateful yes. to yes. us, giving us the grace that we need. That even when we decide, we like, no, I'm gonna do what I want to do. He's still like, oh, okay. He's like, yeah, I see you back right here about this time next year. Come on back now. When you finish walking that same circle, I'll be right here. I'm gonna let you walk into that wall a couple more times, and when you're ready,
more times.
And as I'm hearing your story, I'm so grateful, because as I'm hearing it, I'm being reminded that it's not something that somebody else has in them. It's not something somebody else has in the soul to show you. It's been there all along. It kind of like reminds you of the Wizard of Oz, like when you get to the end, like she has shoes and she realizes at the end, like, you had it all along. That's what I see. Like, it was already downloaded in you from the beginning when you were hidden in your mother's womb. Like, all of that was right there.
Yeah.
You chose you wanted to go over there. I'm gonna make you wander. You want to go wander. Go wander. And then when you come back, we'll be right here. So in this, you're at the airport at this point, I'm assuming. Have you left yet?
No, I have not left.
Oh, you see, and you're still there.
I'm still there.
Okay.
What happens is...
He almost died. No,
oh, my Lord. Wait a minute. I got to go deeper than that. I just seemed like he almost died. Wait, how? What? Well, what happened? You know, they're doing some stuff in these airports. So what happened in your case?
Well, at this particular time, I had dealt with, well, in my childhood, I dealt with asthma. And, you know, I had grown out of it. And so I'm okay and everything's good. But starting working in the airport, the fumes started to get to me. Mm-hmm. And it started coming back. Mm-hmm. And this one particular day, I'm out there. And at this point, I'm dealing with the asthma again. And they prescribed me an inhaler and all of that great stuff. And I forgot my inhaler at home.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So you literally lived your life at the house.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm just, I'm just going and hustling and bustling and doing things. And I get to this point where I need my inhaler and I'm feeling around in my pockets. Mm-hmm. And the thought, you left that at home. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. And so I called my boss on our radio. We carried these radios with us. And I said, I need to go home. I need somebody to relieve me of work. And they say, and their response was kind of like, well, why do you need to go? What's the reason? And instead of being more concerned about, okay, is something wrong? Do we need to come now in this rushing over there? It was just these series of questions and them showing up about 2 hours later after I had contact them.
Yeah. So, you know, I was done with them at that point.
And so they come get me. They bring someone to relieve me. I go back to the main office and I'm there waiting for transport to take me to my car. Well, I'm assuming, okay, y'all gonna call somebody to come pick me up. This is what I was told. Well, at this time it's roughly 11:30-ish, going on 12. Transport doesn't come until about 1 o'clock, 1:30. And so I'm sitting out there waiting on transport for hours, breathing like my lungs are about to fall out of my chest. And so when she says, about to die, yeah.
Yeah, you literally were about to die.
Right.
And so at this point, I'm getting to my car, get in the car, go home, and get the inhaler. And at that point, you know, I realized something has to change. And so.
And he doesn't tell me about this until after later when I get home from my job, because I would be hot.
Yeah.
With these, you know, about these people almost like my husband died.
And so I'm talking with God about it. And can you even imagine that I was still hard-headed?
So most people's right, like, before you end up on the slab, you still you're gonna be hard headed again. Like usually once you get towards the light, it'd be like, you know what, God? I done seen your sandals, God. I'm gonna break down. You still like, nah, I'm gonna do this. Good luck. What?
But you know what that speaks to is the fact that how
ingrained,
you know,
that
norm is like, how do I leave my job? How do I give up this salary? How do I, you know, what's my wife going to say? Your wife going to say, leave the job, you know? And so it just shows how we get so committed and so ingrained
and
boxed into
because
that.
You're thinking, like you mentioned earlier, you start thinking, I have people relying on me.
Yeah.
I can't just make this shift or make this change. Mm-hmm. And so when you don't know how to make the shift or change and you realize, okay, I can't do that because I have people relying on me, the safest secure decision is,
quote unquote,
keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Don't rock the boat. And so you keep sticking with it, even though it's literally killing you.
Exactly. Look at her face. She's like,
so the reason why I say this is because as I'm hearing this, and it's sad to be said, I've heard so many different stories of people saying, and whether it's killing you in the physical, whether it's killing you in the spiritual, whether it's killing your mental health, and I believe for me, I've just always been a very big component about, you know, taking care of your mental health. Because I am a counselor, that's what I do. And before I got into that field, I was dealing with children in the classroom who were dealing with mental health coming from home, themselves, all kinds of stuff. So I never really got out of it, not knowing at the time. Mm-hmm. So you've gotten here, now you're here with these people. They have almost allowed you to just completely die on a job and be like, yeah, we just gonna call your wife and be like, this is what it is. What were the steps after this? What did you do?
Well, the breaking point that led into the steps was my wife had our surprise third child, our youngest boy. And I wanted to be there for that.
And not die.
And of course not die. But I wanted to be there and I needed to be there. And their hope, and I called in, let them know, look, my wife just went into labor. We're at the hospital, XYZ.
He came early, and so it was a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so after some days being there, I called them and let them know, hey, I can't I have another day off? And their thought, their response was, well, if you take a day off, we're going to write you up.
What now? I'm sorry. Come again. So... My wife is here trying to have a kid.
Yeah.
And the response you give to, I want to be here to support my wife, is we're going to write you up.
Yes.
That says so much about the paternity issue in America. Because in other countries, literally, they give the husband, some countries give him up to the month before the child is born. Some countries do a couple of weeks before, but none of that is held against them because they want you to be just a part of that experience, just as much, if not more. Well, you can't be more because moms are the worst. Yeah. But, you know, they want to be a part of that experience. Yeah. And to hear that, you know, literally knowing that you're getting ready to watch the birth of your child and somebody says you're going to be written up. Okay. I got a word for that, but that's not a Holy Ghost word. wow, that's what I'm gonna say. And so at this point, it's funny, you said, but the baby came early. And the first thing I thought about was the baby came right on time for you to break out of that old pattern.
Yeah.
That was the first thing that came to my mind when you said it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so.
That extra push.
Yeah.
Literally.
Literally.
That was the push that did it for me. And at that point, we were sitting in the hospital room and my wife and I were talking. She said, I think you need to leave. And I said, when she said it, I knew it was, there's been twice that I was dealing with something and my wife would say something and I knew it was God behind it. And at that point, it wasn't kind of, well, you know, I can't do it. Just like, it was kind of like, okay, I know that's you. I don't have any clue how to do this.
Right.
And so we just kind of said, you know, once you go back, it's just go ahead and put your 2 weeks notice in. And so I did that. And they kind of laughed. And they say, you're not leaving. You're kidding, right? Mm. I said, no, I'm leaving.
What?
I said, this is my notice. This is my 2 weeks notice. And that'll be it. And so even through that 2 weeks, they thought I was joking. And I was just going to come and know. And so I made that decision. But after I did leave, it was kind of a, okay, what now, God?
Yeah.
There was things I was doing prior to that, business related, but it was, honestly, it was just kind of being out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know where to go.
Because mind you, we didn't have any example of that. You know, we both had grown up in households where your parents just work and work and work and work, you know? And so we didn't have any blueprints of, you know, being self-employed or how to, you know, navigate that. And so it was necessary, but it was new and it was a little scary.
Yeah.
You know?
It was definitely scary. And I remember just spending time with God and say, okay, God, you're gonna have to show me how to do this. And I'm still doing what I was doing business related because I was in life insurance. And I'm selling life insurance. And I'm sitting down with clients. And things were wonderful when I was working. But now I'm in this space where things begin to slowly decline. And so I remember this one day I'm sitting in McDonald's with my cheeseburger and my Coke. And I'm like, God, something's got to change. I can't do it like this. I felt like you said leave. But why are things like this? Mm-hmm. I'm confused. And it was kind of one of those things like, well, now that I'm brought into the conversation, I want to help you navigate through this. It's not, if I led you to leave, then I'm going to also lead you to go.
Yeah.
And I think we have to try to make the decision to shift our norm by ourselves.
Right.
And we don't. Because in order for us to redefine the norm, we have to redefine what works, right, what's functional. And we do that by going to the one who created us and who knows, okay, this is what's functional for you. And he begins to walk you day by day, step by step through that. So I want you to think about, I remember when I was in McDonald's, I was doing my life insurance business one way. And he said, once you do that thing on social media you normally do, but do it with your clients. I said, oh, that's not going to work. God, you can't do that on social media. Because in my head, I'm thinking in terms of a norm. I don't see anybody in the industry doing it like that. That's not going to work.
Well, here's the key. When you're called to be a trailblazer, there is not going to be a blueprint.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it is.
And to be honest with you, I never saw myself as a trailblazer. Mm-hmm. I saw myself as a great employee, a great follower.
Oh, wait, hold on, wait, I'm gonna tell you why I say that. Because for me, so many times we only see ourselves, or we've been groomed, let me say that, we've been groomed to see ourselves as just an employee. Exactly. And one thing that the young man, he's the one who started the whole hot Cheetos, spicy Cheetos movement. He said, ran over their company, made this statement, you're not just an employee, you're part owner. And he said he took that particular statement and he ran with it. Because to him, you gave me license and authority to know I don't have to just be an employee. I am owner. And what I love about it is that as he's telling you, you still like this. You don't go, I don't know about that guy. No. And he's like, I need you to do it this way. Whatever you were doing, it was working. You just didn't see it in that format. What I find interesting is once we step out and do it, all of a sudden it pops up like popcorn and people start doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly what happened.
The one who blazes the trail.
And that's exactly what happened. I said, I was sitting there and he said, why don't you try that? I said, that's not going to work, but I'll do it. And so I pulled out my phone, went on Facebook, and I sent some messages. I came up with this message, sent it to a few people, and started getting responses. Wow. And I'm looking like, are you kidding me? He's like, no. That's what I was telling you.
He's telling you the purpose.
Yeah. And so I start moving towards that. And even in that space of moving towards where he leads me on social media, I still don't see anybody else doing it. And he starts giving me ideas. When I ask, and this is the wonderful thing about how God connects with us and shows us different things. We ask for it, and you can be sitting there and you feel an impression, or you get a thought, or you get this image in your head and you realize, wait, that's God.
Yeah.
And he's communicating to you, okay, do this, do that. Somebody comes and say, hey, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, and something clicks and say, that's it. That's what I was praying about. That will work. Mm-hmm. And you start to follow those breadcrumbs that God leads you into something that works, that makes you functional and becomes your new norm.
And that's where our, I don't know what you call it, theme or whatever, you know, really came from. Because I mean, he's chapter one, and I guess you would call my journey chapter two, because my journey is new. I've stayed on my job and stayed on my job and stayed on my job, you know, and continued to work the laborious, you know, work that I was doing until a few months ago. So this is brand new for me. I mean, I've only been off my job for, a few months. And so I'm having to follow, you know, this trend. But, you know, several years ago, God gave me an idea for a blog or for, you know, something for us to, you know, to do. And, you know, when I asked him about, and what it was is that it started out where I just kept getting these thoughts about things being remade, things that people thought were trash or things that people thought were useless or no longer necessary in their current form. You know, I just kept thinking those things were, I kept getting so many ideas about those and would think that was so beautiful. And I look it up on social media. I look at it in YouTube or Facebook or this, sorry about that, or whatever. And think, gosh, that is so cool where they're repurposing these things or recycling or reusing or renewing. Oh, that is so neat. You know, they're redefining something for a new purpose. You know, and so that is kind of the path God led us into. And so I started this blog and I said, you know, we'll call it redefining what is functional. You know, we'll redefine the function of something and help people realize, you know, this was maybe thought it should go in this path, but God thought something else for it, you know? And so that's kind of the theme that our life has been living, you know, since then is, you know, people thought that college and marriage and house and car and, you know, this path is what the definition is of success. But God is telling us, no, redefine that, you know? And so that's where we are. So this is chapter two of that journey where we're listening to God and he's practical and he's telling us step by step by step how to do this.
And so where can we find the blog?
Oh, it's redefiningfunctional.com.
Redefiningfunctional.com.
Yes.
Y'all make sure y'all go check it out. Listen, I can stay here for a whole two more hours, but I can't do that today. I have got to go. So listen, y'all make sure y'all stay tuned for the Patrice Brantley Show. We're on this show, Helping Others is the Name of the Game, and where we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Stat, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcasts. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.